Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Batter up.
Back to a pod of their own. It's been a while. I am Allison McCaig, and this is episode 29. I am joined once again by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison, and happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes, listeners, today is indeed my birthday. So, yay, that's nice. And I am also joined by Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison, and also happy birthday.
Thank you. I think it's a very nice, just aesthetically nice that it's October 29th and it is episode 29. That just makes me happy inside.
Ooh, that is nice.
Yeah. But yeah, folks, it's been a while since we've been in your feeds because we thought to ourselves, oh, you know, we'll just do a rotational schedule in the off season where we record every other week because things can't possibly happen that much, right? Well, you know.
Womp womp.
A lot has happened since we have joined you all in your earbuds last, and we'll get to a lot of that in the second half of the show. But in the first half of the show, we'll talk about the Mets managerial search, which in comparison to all of the events in the rest of baseball has moved at an absolutely glacial pace. And since we last
recorded, I was gonna say,
not much has happened.
Yeah,
like legit nothing has happened except for apparently 800,000 managerial interviews. They're in round 75. Like
they've eliminated nobody except for Girardi, who got hired.
Yeah, it's it's like wild, but in a very unwild way.
Yeah, I felt really proud of myself because today I copied the viral tweet of like Joe Buck, welcome to the top of the 47th, sun rises, sun keeps getting bigger, oh God, yes, tweet. And I just made it, welcome to the Andy Martino, welcome to the 47th round of Mets managerial interviews, sun rises, sun keeps getting bigger, oh God, yes, world engulfed in flames.
I mean, my question is, once we're all officially managerial candidates, then who's going to interview? And because eventually, like, whoever's on that interviewing team will also be looped into a round of interviews. And it's like that, it's like that mathematical contradiction of like, the barber shaves every man in town who doesn't shave himself, so who shaves the barber? Like, who's going to interview you?
Yeah.
Once there are officially 7 billion managerial candidates.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm
man.
Scared
oh,
we're going to get stuck in some sort of, like, time warp loop where, like, everybody's just interviewing each other and, like, we repeat for the rest of eternity and we just, like, never leave this weird, like, rip in the time-space continuum that we've created.
Well, and also, would even they have eliminated anybody? Like, Girardi would probably still be a candidate if he didn't accept the job elsewhere.
Yeah.
So the needle literally has not moved since
they
the last
time. They eliminated Skip Schumacher, I think, only got one interview.
Phew!
Yeah, right?
Small victories.
I think they eliminated, I think Luis Rojas is, like, no longer being considered.
But didn't Martino say, like, DeFrancesca, somebody interviewed, who was it today?
Yeah, DeFrancesco?
Yes.
I mean,
I don't know if that qualifies as bombshell, but
I doubt it.
I will say there is literally no human being under consideration right now who I would consider bombshell by any definition. But I don't know, the overwhelming feeling I get from this is that they just have no idea what they want. Yep. Like, none whatsoever. And that's not great. They had kind of a while to think about that. I know what I would look for in a manager, and nobody's paying me to figure it out, so...
Like, I get casting a wide net. You don't want to limit yourself, because there might be a good candidate that you just might not come across otherwise. But at the same time, make a freaking decision.
Yeah. Right now, I think, so the people, other than, like, these random, so DeFrancesco was a new one that popped up today. Like, every single goddamn day, there's a new person, too. It's not just, like,
mystery candidate.
Yeah, they keep doing rounds of interviews. It's like every round of interviews they do, there's like a new guy that comes up and it's like, this is his third interview. It's like, well, we didn't even know about his first interview, but fine. Yeah.
Wait,
so
who's
like,
the random? The from, was it Murphy?
Pat Murphy.
Who's yes.
In the Brewers organization. So like he was a random that came up. So like he's, I guess, around. And then like Tony DeFrancesco interviewed, who's the AAA manager. He interviewed.
I sort of feel like mystery candidate should be reserved for people I care about.
Yeah, right? These should be the rules. Someone petition Major League
and
Baseball.
Also, you might ask yourself, how would the Mets know that I don't care about Pat Murphy? They know. They know.
They know.
And they definitely know.
So yeah, it's those two guys are like the mystery candidates that popped out of nowhere. But as far as guys we already knew about, that are still in the mix. Derek Shelton got a third interview. Carlos Beltran got a third interview. Eduardo Perez got a third interview. And Tim Bogart got a third interview. So
woo!
It's a lot of people still in the mix, whereas other teams were kind of like the Phillies were like, eh, we interviewed two other guys and Joe Girardi sounds like Joe Girardi. The Angels were like, we want Joe Maddon. Here you go, Joe Maddon. It's like every other team like seems to know
yeah, the
what they want.
Yeah, and the Padres hired some rando. Like, okay, yeah. Sure, well, you do you, Padres.
Well, the Padres just like to hire like dudes who are friends with their GM. So
that's true.
Like,
I will say,
there.
If the Mets' goal with just the incredible like never-endingness of this entire process, if their goal is to get everyone to say, I just don't even care who the manager is, then job well done, Mets, because legit, I do not care. Pick a manager. Let's move on.
Yeah, and like, how much power does the manager really have these days?
Not at all.
Yeah, because I feel like it's somebody that they want who they can control, if I could speak, since there was a recent Athletic article that said Baird was a regular visitor in Callaway's office and they talked about the bullpen regularly. So that shows how involved this front office wants to be.
Yep.
So, so I feel like, you know, they do say you go in a complete 180 from the last person you hired, but I don't know if that's the case here because a first-time manager would probably rely on the front office more than like a Dusty Baker or a Buck Showalter would.
Yeah, usually after you have a completely failed managerial hire who is a first-time manager, you'd want to have a little bit of a more experienced hand at the helm, but the Mets don't actually want that. They want a mouthpiece for ownership. So it seems like pretty much all these candidates are, you know, that can be that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, Beltran would be fun, but I just, you know, you
don't
want
him to sully himself.
Exactly. That's what it is. It would, I mean, he already, like, people already have a bad taste in their mouth, justified or not, with Beltran, and people always end up hating the manager. And does he really want to go through that again with this organization?
I just feel like he can do better.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really can. I mean, like, he was seriously considered for the Yankees job before they hired Boone. Like, that would have been a nice gig for him. But I don't know. He clearly, like, Beltran clearly really wants to manage. Like, that much is clear. Like, I think he actually really does want to manage. And
but he refused to interview except for with the Mets and I think one other person.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think he would have, like, I think if the Yankees had offered him their position, he would have taken it. I think he just wants, like, even though obviously there's a fraught relationship between him and Jeff Wilpon, it's not so much as with Fred, and like also I think he probably gets along with like other people in the Mets organization, like Terry Hollins, for example, Omar Minaya especially. So, like,
are we sure Terry Collins isn't the mystery candidate?
Yeah, right? Jesus Christ.
I mean, tell me right now that he's not at least, like, a 50th percentile option. I'm not saying he's a... I'm just saying, like, of the universe of candidates, he's right there in the middle. That is where we are at this point.
Yeah. Christ. And it's, like... And I would put it, I mean, like, I'm not saying that the chances that we're making jokes here. I'm not saying that the chances that Terry Collins is the mystery candidate are high, but they're not zero. Let's be real. They're not zero.
I mean, he's still kicking around the organization, so you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think, with Beltran, I just think he, like, you know, obviously he has the fraught relationship with ownership, but he does have friends that are still with the Mets, and I think that he clearly wants an organization that he had a previous relationship with. He doesn't want to just, like, you know, manage any old team and just, like, start from scratch. He clearly wants to build on existing relationships, so, you know, whatever, good for him. I agree that it would suck to have, like, more blame Beltran narratives. That would be, like, endlessly tiring. But
I just don't want to find myself blaming Beltran.
Yeah. But at this point, it's kind of like Beltran or, like, one of these, like, mediocre white dudes. And I'm like, do I really want... Ugh, yay.
Yeah, it's, like, a lot seems to be leaking out about Bogar.
Yeah. I think he's, like, the ownership favorite.
That's what I'm afraid of, too. Like...
Because isn't it Andy Martino writing all about Tim Bogar all the time?
I know Puma was.
Yeah.
Puma had quite a few about him, and it might have been Martino. Yeah.
Really? Her? What, is she funny or something?
Yeah.
You know, I tweeted that exact same thing to Vaz the other day.
Her?
Her? Oh, man.
Oh yeah, Puma asked Adam Eaton about Tim Bogar today. Like, who cares? Oh, and Pat Murphy. The takes are coming on Pat Murphy.
Oh, that's right. And Adam Eaton was like, he threw baseballs to my kid. And I'm like, that's not really, like, that's not what makes a good manager, but that's nice. I like
it. Adam Eaton, pay your mortgage.
Yeah, worry about paying your mortgage first before weighing in on the managerial update.
I think he'll do just fine with all the postseason shares.
Yeah, right. True.
Wait, here was a good one from Puma. Brewers bench coach Pat Murphy, who has received multiple managerial interviews from the Mets, has been described to me as, get this, and I quote, a younger version of Terry Collins.
I want to die.
Womp womp. There it is again.
We're trapped in the worst timeline. it was funny because today I tweeted that all I wanted for my birthday was for the Mets managerial search to be over, and like a couple of people made the very good point of being like, Allison, be very careful what you wish for. And I'm like, good point, Twitter. For once you have made a good point. Thank you.
Please tell me you didn't blow out your birthday candles yet.
No, I have not. I don't think that this birthday is going to involve candles in any fashion. It involved lots of nice things, but candles were not involved. So we don't have to worry about jinxes.
Yeah, because I've seen Liar Liar and what the power of a birthday wish can do.
No, this was just a birthday wish tweet. I'm not sure that counts. Although it is something that I've put out into the world, so.
Yeah, you're supposed to keep birthday wishes to yourself or they won't come true.
Yeah, so, I mean, this day is almost over, and the manager is clearly far from decided, so I don't think it's coming true anyway.
So we might be safe.
Yep. So, I think there are a couple of, you know, if you want to call them interesting nuggets, other than the fact that this is, like, never ending, to talk about with this managerial search. One of them is obviously the obvious, like, if you want to call it missing out on Joe Girardi, like, I don't know. It depends on your perspective whether it counts as missing out, right? But, like, it's telling that, like, the Mets had this guy that was very different from all the other candidates that they were interviewing. It was, like, the only one with any experience, and it was, like, the one prestige candidate, I guess you could call it, regardless of how you actually feel about his managerial philosophy. And their division rival just went ahead and hired him instead.
Well, he also seemed to be legitimately interested in coming to the Mets, which
exactly
I would understand, yet he was. But then you look back and like, when was the last time the Mets actually went out and got the big guy?
Well, like, they're still paying Mickey Callaway, so they can't pay another big guy.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't even know at this point if it's about money with them. Because, I mean, you know, but like, you know, the difference between like a high manager salary and a low manager salary is not, it's not all that much in the grand scheme of things. And I just, I don't know, they just never seem to be willing to close the deal on anyone of note ever. But there might be some recency bias in that. But really, like, when was the last time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't. And the thing with the Mets is, like, so some of these candidates that they're looking at, like, were kind of, like, hot managerial, like, hot up-and-coming managerial candidates, like, 5 years ago. But which is, like, what the Mets are always freaking doing. They're always, like, 10 years behind the times. It's like, ooh, like, we've got this newest, like, this newest analytic, WRC+. I don't know if people have heard of it. They're always, like, behind all the other, like, actually forward-thinking organizations because the Mets aren't forward-thinking, but they want the fans to think they are.
Have you heard this new band, Panic at the Discotheque?
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
So edgy.
Sorry. Like... Well, and then they made such a big show of revamping the front office last year, which, okay, great. They made a big show about it. I'm all for that. But then they hired Chili Davis, who went against analytics.
Yeah.
It seems like the front, there's still a disconnect between the front office and the on-field product. So, like, figure it out.
Yeah. And, like, so, yeah. And so, to me, like, the best thing that we as the fans, in my opinion, can hope for in the new manager is that they can, basically, to me, the Mets manager has two jobs at this point, because we can't hope for anything resembling, like, independence for on-field decisions. So let's take away the on-field managing for a second. I mean, I think that they can do better than Mickey Callaway. They can also do worse, which is a terrifying thought. But I think they can do better than Mickey Callaway as far as, like, you know, in-game decisions. But let's take that out of the equation for a minute. Manager needs to be able to do two things. They need to be able to get that clubhouse that the Mets have, which is a pretty damn good clubhouse right now. They need to get that clubhouse to buy in, one, which is a pretty low bar, because I think that this clubhouse is pretty bought in to what they think this team can do. So they need to keep that energy. And two, they need to deal with the New York media. Those are the two bars, basically, that I think that this, like, if this manager can deal with the New York media and not lose his clubhouse, that's, like, the bare minimum. And, like, that I'm kind of okay with it, because at this point the in-game decision making is, like, gonna be dictated by the front office.
Well, at the bare minimum, don't threaten to fight reporters.
Right.
Yeah. Step one.
Step one.
Don't threaten to fight anybody.
Yes.
And as far as dudes who could probably do both those things, like, it's really hard because, like, these would all be rookie managers. So who the hell knows? Like, we don't have any track record to base this on. So speculating on how anyone's in-game decision making would go anyway is kind of foolhardy at this point. But as far as dealing with the media and getting the clubhouse to buy in, two guys that I think could do that are Carlos Beltran and Eduardo Perez. I think both of those guys would be capable of that. Whether that actually comes to pass is a different matter. But I think that they have the skills to do that.
Yeah, I know that's one of the appeals of Perez, is since he's been in the media, he knows the other side of it and can navigate it. So I can kind of see him being successful.
And he's just like a personable dude.
Yes. Yeah, he seems like kind of chill, and he said, like, every time I've seen him, like, he seems smart when he's talking about baseball.
Right.
Like, so, like, that's number one.
Like, he knows about analytics, but, like, again, the front office is dictating these things, and also, like, who knows how that will actually play out in an in-game situation. Just because you know how to look up something on Fangraphs.com doesn't make you, like, a sabermetrics genius.
And also, are they interpreting the analytics correctly?
Exactly.
Because their defensive positioning seems awful. Yeah. And
among other things.
Yeah, so I don't know if their numbers are telling them how to position their players correctly.
Yeah. And the other thing, so that was one interesting thing. And the other interesting thing that I found, other than, like, losing out on Joe Girardi, the other interesting, like, tidbit in this whole search that we can cover quickly before moving on to all the rest of the bullshit we have to talk about that doesn't have to do with the Mets, is just the fact that the way that this whole thing has gone down through the media this time around has been very different. Like, there just haven't really been leaks, like, as much, and the leaks have been, like, of a different pattern. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's, we didn't know about all these mystery candidates, and they keep, like, cropping up every day, randomly. Like, that didn't happen last time. And there's been a lot of, like, mystery surrounding the whole process. Like, and it's probably because they don't know what they're doing, but, like, I feel like last time, at least, like, we got some random tweets from beat writers about, like, what the front office was even thinking, but this time we have none of those types of tweets. We just have, like, mystery candidate number one, third round of interviews, here are the guys. Like, it's just, like, and, like, everything's, like, on a delay.
Well, and you have contradictory things, too. Right. Like, John Heyman and Andy Martino tweeted the exact opposite things at the exact same time.
Which means they're each getting different information from different guys within the either ownership or the front office. Like,
so do they not know what they're doing? Do they, like, does the left hand not know what the right hand is doing?
Yeah.
Can they not
Classic
control?
Mets.
Yeah, can they just not control what's leaking out? Like, all of that just is very concerning.
So they've been very, like, on one hand, they've been very, like, tight-lipped because there hasn't been, like, much that is leaked out, like, I guess you could say in real time, so to speak, because everything's been kind of behind. But, like, when the stuff does leak, it comes later and it's, like, contradictory information, so it's clear that they have no idea what's going on. And it's just like, yeah, this is just, like, classic Mets stuff. And, like, I don't know, like, I like the take that the, like, you know, the edgelord take that I've been, the edgelord Mets Twitter take that I've been seeing is like, oh, how, like, you're ripping the team now for being thorough. They're not, like, thorough is not what, how I would describe this.
And they've had months. Like, they knew they were firing Mickey. Like, this didn't just happen. You've had months to prepare for this.
Yeah, and the Mets acted like they weren't sure if they were firing Mickey Callaway. I think they knew they were firing him, like, right after that reporter incident, and they just decided to let him finish the season. So, like, and even if they weren't 100% sure they were firing him, they knew it was a possibility. So couldn't you just, like, have some internal discussions about, like, if we decide to fire Mickey at the end of the season, here's what we're kind of thinking for our overall philosophy of this thing. Like, what is, like, I still don't know what Brody Van Wagenen wants with the future of this team. He's been GM for a year. So, like, what, like, I still don't understand, like, his... Like, the Mets have no organizational philosophy at all.
I mean, I think Brody, for all his faults, does want to win and try to go for it. It's just, what are the constraints he's working with and how can he accomplish what he wants?
Yeah.
So I think there is a desire to win, but I feel like there's probably some arguments in the front office of how they go about doing that. I mean, I have no proof to back it up, but that's just the feeling I get.
Well, and I mean, when it comes to, like, trusting the process, when it comes to the Mets, like, when have the Mets ever warranted anyone? Like, what have they done to earn anybody's trust in all this?
Right.
Like, how many benefits of the doubt do we need to give these guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, once again, prove me wrong, Mets.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
make a great hire.
Right. Like, I don't, it's not like I'm looking at all these candidates and I'm like, oh my God, this is a disaster. Because the, like, we cannot I can't possibly know how any one of these guys would turn out because they're all going to be rookie managers again. Just like I don't think any of us could have known how Mickey Callaway would have turned out and turned out to be a disaster. But that doesn't mean this next guy is going to be a similar disaster. But like, it's just frustrating that I feel like it reflects a certain, like, again, lack of cohesive philosophy within the organization. And you're seeing like discord between what, either within the front office or like between the front office and ownership or both.
Well, even before they hired Mickey, I think there was the rumor that there was a discord between Fred and Jeff. Like Fred right. wanted more old school and Jeff wanted like new school. So I'm assuming that hasn't gone away. They're right. still the same dudes making the same decisions. So
they compromised with no school.
The blandest person possible.
No school.
Or they can always go with the person who lights up a room like Art Howe did.
Yeah, right. Oh, God, Art Howe.
Whoever has the nicest smile.
Yep. I mean, it's essentially who, like, impresses Fred Wilpon in interviews.
Yeah.
Is who's going to get it. So, who knows? It's good. I mean, the other than like Beltran, just because of the like, you know, history with the team, like any one of the rest of these hires would not make much of a splash, which is fine if it works out. Like, I'm not saying the Mets have to make a splash for it to be a good hire, but like, it just means that like, there's no track record for us to know if it's going to be a good hire. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
And just because it's another first time manager doesn't necessarily disqualify them.
No.
Like, I'm willing to give another first-time manager a chance, but just make it the right one this time.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I don't know, maybe, like, give him a little freedom to, like, actually make his own choices and show us what kind of manager he is.
Oh, what a novel concept.
Can't possibly. So, we'll see. You know, they're probably going to hire them, you know, sometime soon, like shortly after the World Series concludes. I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe.
How many rounds of interviews can they possibly freaking do? Like,
why would you ask that question?
Yeah,
do
don't
we even
want to
know
there.
The answer?
Yeah, the Mets are like, hold my beer, challenge accepted. Because the problem is now is that, like, with Joe Girardi, like, gone, like, none of the rest of these guys are targets for other teams, so it's not like the Mets like have any impetus to like speed things up here, really. So they'll be here all night. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Hopefully this concludes soon, because I'm really just like sick of hearing about it for the most part. And you know, I'm at the stage where I don't think the manager really matters all that much because of the micromanaging of ownership, and just get your talking head and put him out there and leave me alone.
So maybe in 2 weeks when we record again, we'll be talking about our new Mets manager, Tim Bogar.
Probably.
God, I'm gonna have to come up with an opinion of him, aren't I?
Yeah. We have to one of us has to write an opinion piece, like an analysis piece on Amazing Avenue about like Tim Bogar, new manager. And I'm just like, what opinions am I supposed to have about Tim Bogar?
I know, like, he just seems bland.
Milquetoast white dude number 3. Cool. So that's the Mets. There's not really much going on with them besides that. And I think that we've given that plenty of time already.
Oh, wait, I think in 2 weeks, the Rookie of the Year is going to be announced, though.
Yay! So, yeah.
So,
okay,
we all have at least
time,
something fun to talk about.
Next time we record,
about.
We'll have an actual, like, happy, like, good Mets thing to talk about. So that'll be good. Hopefully.
Yeah, don't let us down. Oh, man, I'm going to be so devastated if it doesn't happen.
Oh, my gosh, stop talking! Jeez! Putting so much in the universe, I can't!
Podcast over, we're done.
We jinxed everyone. It's time to fold up and go home.
It's been real. It's been real, listeners.
We had a good run. We
Hashtag
had a good
blame
run.
Linda.
Blame Linda. Yeah. Don't blame Beltran, blame that. Linda.
Alright, I'll wear that one. That was my fault.
Alright, so we're gonna take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the stuff that has happened since we recorded last, which I'm sure if you are a regular listener of this podcast, you know exactly what stuff we are talking about. So stay tuned for that.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
And we are back. So it's kind of like we spent a lot of yesterday and today, the three of us chatting about like how exactly we were going to deal with this segment, because there's just so much that has happened since the last time we recorded. And it's hard to even, it's going to be a heavy segment because it's hard to even organize my thoughts around how angry I am about all of it. But we will try. The main focus of this segment, and we will talk about some of the other stuff that has happened on future segments. Don't worry, they will get their deference. But obviously the main thing that has happened since we last recorded was obviously the whole Astros debacle that happened between the end of the ALCS and now. We are now in game 6 of the World Series, which the Astros, I believe, are winning at the moment. I haven't even looked. I have not watched a second of this World Series.
Nope, neither have I.
2009. For the first time in 10 years, I have not watched the World Series at all. I mean, I'm not saying that like every year I watch every second of it. That's not the case. Like obviously most, when the Mets aren't playing, which is most years, I watch like, I'll like casually watch it like an evening while I'm home, like while I'm like doing laundry or other things. Like that's kind of my World Series watching, generally speaking, when it's not the Mets. But like, this year, I literally have not watched a single second. The Astros are indeed winning. I looked it up. Okay. Cool.
I haven't watched a single inning of the entire playoffs because, I mean, we've had, and we won't probably talk about all of these, but let's run down the list. We've had the racist Tomahawk champ and the Braves half-assing their apology. We've had the Angels and their organization saying that their one of their employees gave Tyler Skaggs drugs. We've had the whole Astros stuff. We've had unjuiced balls, rejuiced balls, the baseball not knowing what's going on with the ball, denying everything about the ball. We've had everything with the Astros, which we will talk about. We've had an umpire threatening civil war with an AK-47. So it's been a pretty, I don't want to say eventful playoffs, but none of those things makes me want to tune in.
Yeah,
it's been an on-brand playoffs.
Yeah, true. For real.
It's almost like you took like all the like cynicism and bullshit I've been feeling about baseball for the past like little while and like concentrated it and like shot it in my veins. And I'm like, okay, well that wasn't fun. That wasn't pleasant at all. I didn't like that. Don't do that again. They'll do it again. So yeah, the main thing that's happened is the whole like Astros nonsense. So,
which like there may be some folks listening who, bless their hearts, have not been internet adjacent for a while. So I think maybe we should give a quick recap.
Yes.
Just to bring everyone up to speed.
Yes. So it does not bring us joy to discuss this, but we have to discuss it. It's important to discuss it. So we're going to. So for those of you who perhaps managed to avoid all of this, here is a brief timeline of events. So this kind of all began trading deadline 2018. The Astros acquired Roberto Osuna despite his suspension for domestic abuse. They leveraged that and were able to get him on the cheap, and he was still eligible for the playoffs because being suspended for domestic violence does not make you ineligible for the playoffs. So they did that.
Unlike other suspensions.
PEDs in particular.
Yeah, steroids in particular. And, general drug suspensions. So Astros did that. Obviously, like, people were not happy with it at the time. Osuna has yet to show any remorse for his actions whatsoever. The Astros don't seem to give a shit about acquiring him at all. And, you know, he stayed on the team and he's been on the team. And, like, you know, there have been occasional, like, redemptive arc stories written about him and kind of fizzled from the headlines, as these things sadly do. So fast forward to now. We are, you know, the Astros won the ALCS over the Yankees. And during that whole celebratory post-game, the assistant GM, Brandon Taubman, yelled at a group of female reporters, "Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so fucking glad we got Osuna." Over and
one
over.
One of which who was wearing a domestic violence awareness bracelet.
Yes, as if that wasn't bad enough. We found out later, so when we first found out about this, it was kind of just like, there was a room of reporters. There happened to be three women and he was screaming it at them. But then we later found out that one of them was wearing a domestic violence awareness bracelet. And she in particular has been very outspoken about this issue in the past, on Twitter and elsewhere. And so,
and he had complained about it in the past. Like, this was not this is not a lucky coincidence for him.
So essentially we learned this was a targeted incident. He was specifically like zeroing in on her, singling her out and yelling at her and the two other women that were near her, yelling this at them repeatedly, screaming it. And so Stephanie Apstein of Sports Illustrated, who was not the reporter that was wearing the bracelet, but was one of the women that was there, wrote a story about the incident and published it. The Astros released a team statement.
Well, before they declined, comment, and then they didn't make Taubman available for comment.
Yeah. In the immediate aftermath, they were like, no comment. Also, we're not making Taubman available to the media. They later, I guess like the next day, released a team statement that essentially accused her of fabricating the story and gaslighted her and said, you know, that's not what happened. You made this up.
An event that happened in a crowded room full of other journalists.
Right.
Who make a career out of seeing what's going on around them and making note of it. And yeah, that's what's so kind of gross and blatant about all this to me is, like, who did they think they were kidding? Yeah. Did they honestly expect that this room full of journalists would just shrug and be like, yeah, I don't know, not my business, whatever. I don't know what they thought they were going to get away with.
Well, and then they said, oh, according to our investigation, it was an employee defending a player. Who did you speak to? Just Taubman and that's it?
They basically
nobody would have corroborated that.
I mean, Jeff Passan wrote an article like that basically said that, you know, according to their investigation, they only talk to other Astros people, so of course that's what they're gonna say. That's what Jeff reported in the article, that the initial investigation involved only other Astros people.
Yeah, so of course they're not gonna say, or they probably spoke to him and was like, no, that's not what happened. Okay, we believe you.
Yeah, like, but why don't even you try talking to any of the other journalists?
Like, even if they good faith believed that this is truly how it went down, what I just don't understand is how do you phrase it like that? How do you flat out accuse a, like, well-established reporter for a respected publication of fabricating a story? That's enormous. That's a huge thing to accuse somebody of.
Right. And like, what blows my mind is, like, they don't even think for 2 seconds about, like, what could possibly be in it for her to make something like that up.
Well, I think they were just, everything that oozes out of that organization is smugness, and they know better. So I think in their mind, they either A, didn't do anything wrong, or B, just thought, oh, didn't think it would get blown up like it did because they're the Astros. They do everything right. They're winning ball games. Like, how can anybody question what they do and don't do? Like, how dare you write a slanderous piece about us?
Well, and it'll blow over, which, yes, like, let's be
because
real.
On the field, we are winning.
And it did for every single person involved, except for Taubman, who I'm sure will have a job at, like, his uncle's brokerage firm, like, next week or whatever. Like, that's right. I'm not particularly convinced that the world is going to dish out appropriate consequences to this finance bro. But whatever. Okay, so he did get fired eventually. But, right, like, did anyone else involved in the organization have any consequences? No.
Nope.
None.
And I think Crane said he signed off on the, was it Crane or Luhnow who said he saw the statement that went
Luhnow
off? Yeah, Luhnow.
Yeah.
So why are there no consequences for that? You flat out lied.
Yeah. And like, when you, like, and going back to the original, like, statement, how could they do something so blatant? When you have a room full of people who have never had to face a single consequence for anything they have ever done in their lives, that's exactly the shit that's going to spew out. Like, we can just lie because no one will care.
Yeah, because everybody in charge of policing them would have done the same thing.
Right.
And like, also,
this is, like, the world we live in now. Like, this is the first step for everything. It's literally like, you did this bad thing. And the response is, no, we didn't. And then it's like, well, actually, multiple people saw you do the bad thing. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, we did the thing, but it's not actually bad, though. Like, that's how the discourse goes down every time now.
And then eventually it'll be like, yeah, it was bad, but also I don't care.
But also, who cares?
Yeah, because she had to beg for a retraction. The retraction didn't come until, like, days later. And that was only after she met with him and said, hey, how can I get my retraction? What do you think? And also, Luhnow was like, oh, I haven't been able to apologize to her. I've been traveling. When she was in the room.
Right there. Yeah. So, okay, so we're going to go back. So, okay, here's more of the timeline. So, there was the initial statement where they were like, you're making this up, it didn't happen. Then, obviously, as we said, this was a room full of journalists, not just these three women. These three women just happened to be the women he was yelling in their face, but there were other people in the room. And so, multiple witnesses, including reporters from the Houston Chronicle, so, like, the local paper, because that was another, like, narrative on the part of, like, Astros Twitter was like, oh, this is the elitist New York media, like, making this into a thing when it isn't. Okay, your journalists from your local paper now are saying this. Corroborated Epstein's version of events. So that happened. And then the Astros realized that they couldn't just straight up continue to say that it wasn't true because they realized that there were enough witnesses that saw it. So they released another set of statements, one each from Taubman and owner Jim Crane. So Taubman's, like, statement was, this was wild, you guys. I should probably just read it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read it because I can't properly capture in, like, my paraphrasing, like, how bad this is. Okay. This past Sunday, during our clubhouse celebration, I used inappropriate language for which I am deeply sorry and embarrassed. In retrospect, I realize my comments were unprofessional and inappropriate. My overexuberance in support of a player has been misinterpreted as a demonstration of a regressive attitude about an important social issue. Those who know me know that I am a progressive and charitable member of the community and a loving and committed husband and father. I hope that those who do not know me understand that the Sports Illustrated article does not reflect who I am or my values. I'm sorry if anyone was offended by my actions.
Oh, boy.
Well, the first thing he apologizes for is using the word fuck.
Which is not the reason anybody's upset.
Yeah, it was really the inappropriate language, brah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why we're mad. You said fuck. Oh,
really?
No. Oh, the heart. Let me clutch my pearls.
No, that's not why anyone is mad. So there's, like, so many things wrong with this. So, no one's mad because you said fuck. That's thing number one. Second thing is that I am a good husband and father. Like, that's supposed to be some sort of excuse.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my
that's,
God.
Like, that's also the, like,
you know who else is a husband and father? Ozuna.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always the thing on Facebook too. Like when it's always a douche bro on, I mean, on Twitter. Twitter, it's always beloved husband, father to two girls, and then a Bible verse. Like that's all Talbin's thing was missing was Jesus. Although I don't know if he's Catholic, but like that's all you're missing is the religious connotation after that.
Is like the the Bible, or like USA the Bible verse.
I mean, what it came down to is he was not sorry for any of the actual things that he did.
It was an apology.
It was, I mean, he literally wasn't sorry. He never apologized. It was nothing. Also, I don't think the word progressive means what he thinks it means.
No. And if he's sorry your feelings got hurt, he's not sorry.
That's thing number three here. So thing number one is, like, he thinks that the thing that's offending people is his language, when that's not true. Number two is the loving husband and father, which is literally like a meme. And thing number three is, I am sorry if anyone was offended by my actions. That's not how you apologize for stuff.
No. And then, of course, he was like, oh, anybody who knows me knows. Yeah, but your actions spoke differently, like, repeatedly, too, because you complained about her tweeting about domestic violence in the past. Like, your actions speak a lot louder than your words did.
I'm sorry if anyone was offended. No, that's not how you say you're sorry. You say,
I screwed up. Can't even make that up.
And did he apologize to the women? No.
No.
He just released a statement. I don't think they ever gotten a direct apology from him.
So he's got free time now if he wants to punch one out.
Yeah.
And like we've said this too, like the fact that the Mets actually handled Vargas threatening to fight a reporter well, like Jeff Wilpon called Tim Healy to apologize personally. The fact that the Astros were worse handling this than the Mets
says
something.
So, it's like, because they all agree with him. That's just it. Like, that's what it comes down to. Nobody's really sorry that he said he's so glad that they got Ozuna, because they are all so glad that they got Ozuna. Like, that's the problem with expecting teams like this to police themselves, is that they all end up falling victim to the same amoral bullshit.
Well, that's why, like, yes, Talbin had to get fired, but they're just going to hire a dude that has the same philosophy, the same culture is going to get perpetuated. Like, nothing's going to change.
No.
Because as soon as everyone else started talking about it, it became perfectly clear that the reason they weren't inclined to hold him responsible is because they don't think he did anything wrong.
Nope.
Right.
And they're not going to start thinking he did something wrong just because they were forced to fire their little puppy dog.
Right. Like, their initial response, like, we can never forget that their initial response was always to gaslight. That was their first response. Like,
the thing that you remember seeing, you didn't really see it.
Right. The only reason that he got fired was because they got caught in a lie. They were forced to do it by the immense public backlash and the fact that, like, basically they, like, got caught red-handed lying. Like, if there were no other reporters in the room besides those three women, he would not be fired right now. He would absolutely not be fired right now. And none of these other subsequent events would have occurred. It just would have been the initial statement and saying, you made that up. You didn't see that. That's not what happened. You misinterpreted that.
Well, and also I think the lying kind of, because a lot of other reporters, which, you know, I can rightfully so, because it is their livelihood, they were kind of going after, like, you slandered a reporter, which, yes, that was awful, but then everybody kind of forgot what the initial problem was.
Right.
Said, you were totally disregarding a serious, serious issue and belittling a serious issue and targeting women. Like, one of them felt threatened to the point that another staffer had to apologize to the group. Like, that to me is the more egregious issue here, is that he basically threatened a group of women. And then they compounded the problem by lying about it, but the journalists kind of just focused more on the lying than the initial yelling incident.
Right, exactly. And like, and so paired with the Taubman statement, there was the statement from Jim Crane, which was basically like, we promise we care about domestic violence because we gave money to these charities.
Yes, and this also goes back to when they first traded for Ozuna, and Luno said that we're going to learn from this and we're going to turn this into a positive. Now, here we are. Is this a positive? Has it been spun into a positive? Or else was that all bullshit, just like your zero tolerance policy was?
Yep. It's all lip service and bullshit. It's like, just don't bullshit us. Don't say you have this.
Yeah, we're
policy.
Not stupid.
In the words of my dad, don't piss on my head and tell me it's raining.
Exactly.
That
exactly
is just like
right.
An unbelievably dad thing to say, but it is.
It's so
A+.
True.
Plus.
Yep.
There's the reason why these things stick around.
So it's just like, it was unbelievable to watch this unfold in real time, because like, not only was it infuriating and upsetting, and like, it was just like, like, they just kept digging themselves deeper and deeper and deeper. It's like, is there a single freaking person around you that can be like, maybe this is bad? That's why, like...
Dig up, stupid.
Dig up, stupid. This whole, like, it just goes to show how this whole organization is, and every Major League Baseball organization, let's be real, like... This is one point I just want to throw out there into the world, because I also saw a lot of like, and I get that it's coming from a good place. I understand it's coming from a good place when people reacted so harshly to this Astros thing and were like, oh, go Nationals, and like became Nationals stands. Like, I get it. And I'm not saying that, I'm not accusing anybody of anything. But what I am saying is I would urge caution in that situation. I would urge you to be careful, because trying to look for a moral alternative is a losing venture.
Well, I even tweeted sport. That, like, when the story first broke, I was like, this is why I'm not watching, because there are no heroes. There's only villains.
Yep.
Like, and Sean Doolittle can be a hero.
Yeah, he's the only one.
I'll let Sean Doolittle be the hero. So, I mean... guilty, because I am all on Team Nationals right now. I just need it to not be the Astros. I just need to not see that team celebrating this right now. I can't. Well, I don't have it in me.
Well, even there was it was an ESPN article. I'm pretty sure it was Jeff Passan. And he spoke to a player, and they said, this isn't about the assholes in the front office. This is about us. But it is about you. You're part of the organization. I know it's not fair, but you can't just ignore this, because this is how the culture gets perpetuated. Like, Ozuna's your teammate, whether you like it or not. This all stemmed from him. From the trade that none of them spoke out about. And this is, and the culture just keeps going and going and going. And this is what it leads to. It leads to more women being harassed. It leads to, you know, and I believe we even talked about this the last time, like, public shaming can do so much. Like, right. If, or if like their peers said something and you can't just wipe your hands of it and say, well, that had nothing to do with me. Because earlier in the article, Alex Bregman gave Taubman a hug and said, we're here because of you. So when good things happen, it's because of him. But when bad things happen, it's not because of him. You can't have it both ways. And this is what's so frustrating about this, is that it takes the public to be the voice here. And it doesn't come from within, and it hasn't come from within. And that's how it seems like nobody cares. And that's kind of heartbreaking as a fan. To watch.
Yeah,
I do need to give just a quick. I just want to give a quick note that Justin Verlander was pretty outspoken, relatively speaking. I mean, certainly, I think he there was more public pushback from him against the Ozuna acquisition than I've ever seen from another player. In that there was any pushback at all. Now that. Largely went quiet pretty mm-hmm. soon after he came around. I don't know if he just felt that it wasn't getting anywhere. I don't know if he was asked to stop. You know, it's I don't know
but,
what the circumstances were, but I do just want to answer.
He's
right,
like,
but
what
I also
have the consequences been.
But I just feel
speaking.
Like if we're gonna hold everyone responsible for their behaviors. Then I do want to give Verlander just some props for having had the guts to say something at all, because usually nobody says anything.
Radio silence.
Yeah, but like, where is he right now?
Right. Yep. Well, that's, you know.
No, because they can't worry about. Yeah, they can't worry about the assholes in the front office. It's about them. That's where they are now.
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah. So to make my stance perfectly clear here, the entire league is complicit in this. The Astros were simply the organization that got caught and had a horrible, like, PR team involved. But let's be real. This attitude, these beliefs, this culture, this is not unique to the Astros at all. Your organization probably, your favorite organization probably has these same attitudes. And trying to find good guys in this situation, in these front offices, is a losing venture. Like, I root for the players on the field. Absolutely. Sean Doolittle's a good guy. Root for him on the field. Alex Bregman's a good guy. Root for him on the field. Root for the players. But, like, don't. I think that, you know, we fall into a trap when we try to take the high and mighty road, pretending that our organization would not do something like this. The Mets organization would do something like this. They would. They simply would. I'm sorry. Like, they would.
Well, they brought Reyes back. They brought Reyes back.
They would have brought him back again if he could do anything on a baseball field.
They sure would. And they still might retire his number. Don't put that out of consideration. They might.
They would make him the manager if they could.
Oh, yeah. No. I've been waiting for the bombshell candidate to be Jose Reyes.
Sorry, that's my bad.
Don't put that one on me.
I've been waiting for the bombshell candidate to be Jose Reyes.
Oh, Jesus. God help us all.
Like, it's just...
But, like, some person tweeted, all this makes me feel sorry I wasn't rooting for the Yankees, and that's hard to do. The Yankees did the same exact thing. They benefited off Chapman. So don't go down that road.
They leveraged, like, Chapman's domestic violence suspension to, you know, they got him on the cheap from the Reds, and then they turned that into Gleyber Torres. Let's not, like...
They benefited twice off Chapman, not just once.
Yeah.
So, and they're the ones who originally went down this road.
Yeah.
So no, the Yankees are not innocent either. There are no heroes, only villains in this.
It's depressing as hell.
Well, and then I read a couple articles. One was from the New Yorker, and I think it was Passan too, saying the Orioles, because they're so analytically heavy, they don't see the player. They just see assets. And they just saw Ozuna as an asset. Like, he was a cheap asset and not a person. And, you know... And how did they conduct it more as, like, business and numbers and just crunching numbers. And Taubman said, I don't even want to go down there because I don't want to get to know the player. I only want to know, like, the stats on the page, basically. I don't think it was in that language, but that was what he was implying. And so, like, is this where we're headed? Is that everybody's just... their numbers, there's no human element anymore, which is why, like, I know robot umpires have gotten a lot of, you know, like, people have been calling for that, but, you know, the human element is what makes baseball beautiful. Like, you try, you fail, you try again, and, you know, sometimes you don't get it right, sometimes it's not perfect, but which one of us does? And I'm not ready for everything just to be a robot and to be stats and to take the human element out, because this is where it goes. You completely ignore everything. Like, domestic violence is acceptable. Then what next? Where's the limit? So I don't think, like, I think you can do both. I think you can keep the human element in the game and not completely ignore horrible things people do, and I think you can also rejoice when people do good things, like Doolittle. So, like, if Doolittle gives up a home run Does that mean he's total garbage now? And like the stats are saying he's total garbage. He shouldn't be on a team. Like, but Doolittle's fun. I would love the Mets to get him. So I don't know. I think there needs to be a balance of both, because this is kind of a scary, scary way that baseball is operating right now.
Yep. Like, we're already there. That's yeah. the sad thing. We're there already. Like, and we've said this a few times on the show before, but I think that this emphasizes it more than ever. Like, this is what happens when you fill front offices with finance bros. Like,
yep.
dudes who just see these things as stat sheets. And like,
yeah, will Curtis Granderson not get a job next year?
Probably not.
Well, yeah, we'll have to, like, we had Keuchel. He almost didn't get a job. Kimbrel almost didn't get a job, like, because that's what the stats are telling them.
And I mean, we had a conversation about this. I think it was in, like, the Patreon Discord for all you kids out there, our friends of our pod friend of the pod. And we were talking about how, like, this exact thing about filling front offices with, like, basically these, like these Yale stat / finance bros, and like the effects that that has. And people were like, why? Like, someone said, I will never understand why someone would sympathize with these people over a player. And I was like, it's because when you look at the players and like their performances, you can't possibly imagine yourself hitting a ball that's coming at you at 95 miles an hour. But when you look at these front office dudes building these teams, sitting at their computers, looking at stats and crunching the numbers, you think, that could be me. So yeah. That's how this happens, is people sympathize more with these people that are in the back offices building the teams than they actually sympathize with the players. They dehumanize the player.
Talbin had his background in playing fantasy baseball. That's how he got noticed.
Yeah, I mean, don't even get me started about the ties to the rotten finance industry that have been building in baseball for years now.
Yep. Yep.
It's the same culture there that they're bringing that into baseball.
And this is the result. This is the result, is they become utterly morally corrupt and concerned only about, not concerned about winning baseball games, that's for sure.
And also, yeah, what are they using these cold, hard stats for? Is it winning, or is it to save ownership money?
Saving money.
Yep.
That's what it's about. It's about having a marginally good enough baseball team to put asses in the seats, but you don't have to win. You just have to be good enough.
You don't even need asses in the seats most of the time.
Yeah, true.
The Marlins are a profitable franchise.
Yep.
They are terrible. Every time they get almost good, they blow it all up again. Their attendance numbers speak for themselves, and yet they are a profitable franchise. And the system has been built, and I mean, they built the system themselves. This like government enforced monopoly has built its own league in which they pay themselves for just showing up 162 games, and what actually happens to those games is immaterial. And the system needs to have, like, the system of incentives needs to change in order to create a competitive spirit again, because right now that's not where the incentive is.
Yep.
But I realize, like, this also does not exactly line up with what we were just saying about how they went out and got Ozuna, you know, to make the team better. But they also got Ozuna because he was cheap. And if they'd cost him money, if he cost them money, he might not have been there no matter what. So, exactly. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. And then, of course, you know, we had the new Puff piece on, Ozuna feels so bad that his name is back in the spotlight.
Oh yeah, fuck you, Ozuna. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like,
shit. And like, yeah,
can we stop? Just nobody interview him, please. Nobody gives a shit what he has to say.
I'm done.
He's and, like, very sad that people say mean things about him. Be still my heart.
And like, And here's the thing,
maybe
too,
all that abusive therapy he had to go through, I am sure, will help him cope with this.
Oh, whoops, I said the F word. I'm sincerely sorry for anybody who was offended by my language.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
Sorry for the offensive language on this podcast, because we realize that that's what's important here.
We're sorry your feelings got hurt.
Yeah, we're very sorry if you were offended.
Ozuna, I'm sorry if you were offended. Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't be a snowflake.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing, too. It's not just, like... It's not just Ozuna himself, like, that... So Ozuna himself is clearly treating this as, like, you know, oh, man, my name's in the papers again. Darn it, what an inconvenience. And, like, but that's kind of how the, like, many Astros fans have treated this. Like, I'm not... And I know it's hashtag not all Astros fans. I know that it's, like, you can't paint broad brushstrokes of an entire fan base because there are bad fans in every fan base. But the segment of... the Astros fan base that is, you know, more sympathetic toward the front office and doesn't think that this sort of thing is a big deal, they're, even the people who do, like, think it's, like, are upset by it, are, like, are only upset by it in the sense that it's, like, oh, this is so annoying, we have to deal with this when we're in the World Series, and we should be excited that we're in the World Series, and now we have to deal with this, like, it's an inconvenience instead of, like, a serious moral failing of your organization.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's why they're like, oh, just, this is about us. It's not about them. No, you don't get to separate yourself. You just don't.
Yeah. Like, I was disappointed with the way that Crawfish Boxes covered this. Very disappointed. Like,
did they ever write anything?
They wrote something, but, and it was, and there were parts of it that were good, but, like, A, it was written in the first person by a male writer. So it kind of rubbed me the wrong way in the sense that it's like me as a fan. It's like me as a male fan. like it's kind of like, you know, couldn't you find one woman to write this? But they can't, because I looked on their masthead and they do not employ any women at Crawfish Boxes. So
it's too bad that no women like baseball.
Yeah.
No.
So it's just like, I don't know, like, cover this better. Don't treat it as, like, an inconvenience. Even when you're trying really hard to, like, acknowledge the seriousness of the issue, which the article did try. Like, he talked about that, like, you know, it's, like, that it was bad. Like, at least he went that far. But, like, don't treat it as an inconvenience to your fan base leading into the World Series. And, like, you'd rather not be paying attention to this. You'd rather be, like, watching the World Series. Like, treat it with the seriousness it deserves. Call out your organization when they're doing shitty things. Don't call out other organizations, and then when it's your organization, turn silent. That's when you need to be the loudest, when it's your team doing the bad things. Like, when the Mets brought back Jose Reyes, that's when I screamed the most. And if they do something like that again, you best believe I will be even more upset than I am now.
Or if they decide to retire his number, or bring him in as a coach, or...
We will scream on this podcast about it a lot. And just, like, I don't know, like, center the voices of the people who should be talking about this. Like, you know, I don't know. Anyway. So, that's the Astros bullshit. There's a lot of other stuff that has happened that Linda went through very briefly that we will cover on future pods, we promise, because there's a lot of other stuff that deserves deference that's kind of all connected in a weird way to this stuff, because it's all about, like, Major League Baseball being, like, controlled by these attitudes. So, yeah. But we will cover these other topics on future pods, and we have guests that will help us, so that will be good. You won't just hear us screaming into the void. We will take another break, because I think y'all probably need a break as much as we do at this point. And when we get back, we will finish the show on a happy note, as we always do, with walk-off wins. So stay tuned for that. Okay. So this week, probably more than any other week since, I don't know, when we had that, like, come to Jesus about our Mets fandom, we need walk-off wins, where each of us is talking about what makes us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise, because even when baseball is making us unhappy, there are always things in life that make us happy. So, Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So my walk-off win is that on Saturday, I took the family to the Big Apple Circus, and I'd never been to that circus before. I hadn't been to any circus in probably like 20 plus years. And it was really a amazing experience. It was much smaller. Like, I think the last one I'd been to was like Barnum and Bailey, three ring bonanza type thing. And this is a one ring circus. I think they can fit like 1,000 or so people into the space. It's a small space, but the performances were amazing, and they're very careful with the animal acts that they have. They have very few animal acts, and they're all domesticated animals. It's all on the up and up animal wise. It's just a really, really good show, and they have targeted performances for families with special needs. So if that's something that you're looking for, they are there for you. In fact, I think they have an autism friendly performance this coming Saturday, November, whatever the heck day that is. Second. The kids loved it. They were even Ellie, who is 2.5. She was transfixed the entire, like, it was about an hour and a half total. She just could not look away, and it was great. There were flying trapeze artists and a guy doing backflips on a horse. There was an acrobat who used a wheelchair, and just a great diversity of types of performers and, you know, demographics of performers. It was just a lot of fun. A+ Big Apple Circus. Check it out, man. So that was ours. And yeah, those the kids had a great time. And now Tommy, who is 5 and takes gymnastics, he says that he wants to be on the flying trapeze, which, like, aww. Okay. Like, please give my heart like a little time to recover for that kind of thing. Cause like, I'm not ready, but it was a great way to spend an afternoon. I would highly, highly recommend it to anybody.
Yay, circus.
That does sound like fun. I've never been to the circus.
You should go.
You should go.
I should. You make it sound like so much fun now.
I've been, but not since I was a kid.
Yeah. I mean, I really had to have been 10 or younger the last time I went. Like, I was young.
Yeah.
I've been to Cirque du Soleil. Does that count?
Kinda.
I've also been to Cirque du Soleil.
It is very cool.
It is cool. It's very cool. Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win? I have to confess, I've never been on an airplane. And last week, I can't remember, I finally survived my first airplane ride.
Yay!
To Florida. And it was exciting. We left out of LaGuardia, so I said goodbye to Citi Field as we were taking off, and then we landed in Miami, and then like 20 minutes, maybe not even, from the airport, we drove past Marlins Park. I was like, oh, hello, Marlins. But I was like terrified. I'm like, I'm going to be that person that gets sick, or I'm going to be that person you hear about on the news that freaks out and is like running in the aisles, like crazy lady on the plane that needed to be handcuffed. but I thought it was exciting, and our flight was delayed, leaving out of LaGuardia, and they're like, oh, we have to wait for a pilot, 'cause you kind of need to pilot to take off. So we were waiting, and then all of a sudden I hear applause, like, oh, our pilot's here. And it was a woman. I was like, Hell yeah. I was like, you know, she's badass. I was like, okay, we're in good hands. Like, that made me feel so much better when I saw it was her. And I went to Florida. We had good weather. It was 86 degrees the entire time. But it was a little humid. It was a little muggy, not going to lie. But we were saying, like, it's so unfair. This is the same Atlantic Ocean. Why does it look like this down here? And why is it, like, Brown in New York. Like, it's still the Atlantic. Why do we get the short stick? Why don't we get, like, the clear blue water that you could just walk right into? But yeah, so that was kind of fun. And, like, now that I know I can survive a plane ride, I think, like, I want to travel more and... yeah, see where else I want to go now. Because, yeah, once you get the travel bug, I feel like that's it. There's no going back now. But, I mean, my bank account might beg to differ. but yeah, so it was a quick trip to Florida. Oh, it's Columbus Day weekend. We left Saturday and came back Monday. And the flight was really super early. And we had to be up at 4:30. And I can't remember the last time I've ever been up at 4:30. So that was kind of hard. But other than that, it was a nice little weekend getaway.
Yeah. I like flying. I actually enjoy it. I mean, like, I don't enjoy the whole, like, airport experience. Who does? But, like, the actual, like, being in the plane,
you,
I enjoy
it. Yeah, when you hear, like, the engines rev, you're like, oh, man, here we go. Like, this is it. Like, I just thought that was so cool. And then seeing the city from up above and... we caught the flight out of Miami at 7 a.m. So we saw the sunrise in the air, basically.
That's
so
really
that,
cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. So I was like, wow, like it just the science behind it all, like because you can see, you know, on the plane, like, oh, it's -47 degrees out your window. And yet we're fine. Like just how people engineered this when they had before there were planes, like how did they even think to do all this? It just kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, feats of human engineering. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just was on a plane recently because I went to Houston for a conference, and that was pretty cool because I'd like never been to Houston before, so it's always cool to get to see a new place. But also, like, up until this whole Astros debacle, this was pre all of that. It was cool to, like, you know, be in a city where it was during the ALCS. So it was cool being in a city, like, with a playoff atmosphere, you know? I mean, they were actually away during the time that I was, like, there. During the few days that I was there was when they were in New York, like, playing the Yankees in New York. But, like, it was still cool to see, like, you know, Astros flags on every house and, like, people, like, wearing their, like, caps to the conference. Like, wearing their, like, conference attire but with, like, an Astros hat. It was just cool. Like... it's always cool to see an entire city get hyped up like that because, like, being a Mets fan from New York, you know, like, New York has two different teams, obviously. So, like, it's not ever, like, the whole city behind one team, usually.
Kind of felt like that in 2015, though.
It did.
Because the Yankees were having a down, like, they're like, 45-minute downswing. But I thought that was
they got eliminated in the wild card that year, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, was that the year they played Keuchel in the wild card game and got eliminated, like, right away?
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of, yeah. But, yeah, so their playoffs were a hot second, basically.
Yeah.
But it was it definitely felt, the city felt like it was more full of Mets fans than usual.
Yeah.
I miss that.
And, like, obviously, like, New York's a really big place. So, like... when the Mets are the team in the playoffs, like, all the Mets fans come out, and that's, like, more people than there are in the city of Houston, right? So, like, it's still a lot of people, but, like, it just was cool. Like, occasionally I do get pretty envious of, like, the one team cities, because, like, it's just cool to see, like, everyone rooting for the team. So, anyway, that was my Houston trip. That's not my walk-off win, though. That was a diversion. Sorry, everyone. My walk-off win for this week is this past weekend was University of Delaware's homecoming. And today is my birthday, so that's exciting. And homecoming for Delaware is always right around my birthday, which is also always right around Halloween. So it tends to take on this, like, big, like, multi-purpose party atmosphere. So every year, like, all my college friends and I get back together at Delaware during homecoming, and we go to the football game, we tailgate the football game and everything, which is the only time I ever watch football. And then we have, like, a big, the football game is usually during the day. It'll be, like, either, like, a 1 p.m. game or, like, a 3 p.m. game some years. And so we'll tailgate like in the morning, and then we'll go to the football game, and then we'll, and then at night we have like this big Halloween party that like often doubles as my birthday party. And our Halloween parties are themed because my friends and I are super extra and I love everything about it. So this year our theme was Hey Arnold. So we were each different characters from Hey Arnold, and it was, the result was pretty fantastic. I put the pictures on Twitter, so if you guys want to check out the pictures of all of us, all me and all my friends in our costumes, you can check it out on my Twitter. I thought they turned out pretty great. And it was just a great night all around. So Michael and I were Arnold's grandparents, and we won the costume contest. So that was exciting.
Yay!
So it was just a fun, happy weekend, just hanging out with my friends, having a Halloween party, you know, general merriment. It was just a lovely weekend. So, and then, you know, tonight is my actual birthday. And so I went out to a nice low-key dinner with my parents and my best friend at like my favorite restaurant. It was just very pleasant. And so, you know, it's been a good birthday. So that's my walk-off win for this week. At least we're ending that podcast on a happy note as usual, because the rest of it wasn't so great. But we have plenty of other exciting pods in store for you. We'll cover a lot more of the other stuff that we just like didn't have time to cover on this show because a lot has happened. But we will cover them, and we will have really fun guests on to give their perspective on these things. But in the meantime, while you're waiting for the next pod of their own, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We still have, you know, while the World Series is going on, we still have game threads every night for every game. If you are one of the people watching the World Series and want to follow along with other folks watching, we have that. We have our season review series still going strong. We have articles coming out about every Met. Pretty soon we're going to start shifting to free agent profiles for potential Mets free agent signings. And of course, we're going to continue to cover the whole managerial hiring process. So you can go to AmazingAvenue.com for all of that content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter, at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
So you can follow the show and each of us on Twitter. You can subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. Please rate and review the show. Really helps people find it. The original music for this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.